This is in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the United States. We stand with you.
We're poor, Ashe.
Ashe.
We're poor to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge, Ashe.
Ashe. Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science, Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe. We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open-air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, oh my God, oh Madre de Dios, who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions, the children of those who could not be killed, we pour our shame. We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, stop, no more. We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths. We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names.
Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lee Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X,
John Henry Clark, John Jackson, Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Craft, and Sister D.D. Conley. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. I repeat, Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Welcome, family. I am so glad that you're back with us. Your brother Kwasi. We're back with Attorney Evan. Was on the show last week. The topic was "You Can't Take It With You." It was an awesome show. This is part two of the same show, so we have a lot of questions that we're going to try to answer tonight. Before we get started, I just want to just thank Queen Mother Shabaka for setting this up, Dr. James, Doc Rogers, all of the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee. We just thank you for what you do, and this is just an awesome program. Sister Dee Dee, are you with us tonight?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Awesome. Yes. Awesome. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, and yourself?
And I'm hello, doing good. I'm doing good.
That's
yeah.
Good.
Well, you know, good. I'm always waiting to hear because you always give us that ancestral profile to let us know what's been going on in our past. So who do we have today?
Okay, so today I'm going to do Brother Lloyd Price.
Okay.
And I took with him because of last week, man, the show was so good. And this man had so much and done so much. And I was just praying, you know, I pray everything was in order, you know, when he did go home with the ancestors. Because
right.
he had a lot. And just listening to the show last week, man, it just kind of, I said, wow, I think I'm going to do Mr. Price. Plus, he had a couple of good hits, too, that I really liked.
Okay.
So the ancestor profile, I'm going to do Brother Lloyd Price. So can I go ahead?
Go right ahead. The stage is yours.
Okay. Brother Lloyd Price, composer, lyric, and rhythm and blues singer. Lloyd Price was born March 9th, 1933 in Louisiana to Louis Price and Beatrice Price. They were entrepreneurs who owned a restaurant. There were 12 children in the home, where Price played the trumpet and the piano at an early age. He attended Shrewsbury Elementary and High School in Kennard, but he left in 1949. He left in 1949 before graduating. During his teen years, Price was a member of the church choir, but he was always fond of creating secular music. He and his brother formed a band and performed for 3 years in 1952. When Price was 19 years old, he composed his first hit, Lordy, Lordy, Miss Claudy, which reached the number one on the rhythm and blues chart. Oh, yeah. Price was drafted into the United States Army in 1954. And he was assigned to the Special Service Branch, where he was in charge of the music and the activities for the troops' entertainment in South Korea. After his honorable discharge in 1956, he returned to Louisiana, where he created Hit Records, which produced his hit Just Because in 1957. When Kent Folder, shortly after his release, Price signed a record contract with ABC Parliament in 1958, where he produced Dagger Lee, which rose to number one on the pop and rhythm and blues chart. He followed with the 1959 hit, one of my favorites, Personality, which became his biggest hit, selling more than 1 million records. Wow. Price was a solid performer, but he also had a burning desire to become a music entrepreneur. In 1962, he cut ties with Parliament and created Double L, which prepared local musicians for opportunities in nightclubs and parties. He also successfully produced the younger R&B singer, one of my other favorites, Wilson Pickett, on that label, recording It's Too Late in 1963. Price was married to Jacqueline Battle Price. They had three daughters and two sons. Price never hit the charts in the 60s, and by the 70s, he opened a restaurant and a nightclub called Turntable on Broadway in New York City. Later in the decade, he became a property developer, building more than 40 houses in the Bronx, New York. By 1983, he had two construction companies in Lagos, Nigeria, that also built homes. Oh, my, man, he was something else. While continuing to work in property development, he did return to the touring in 1993. He toured Europe with a group of R&B musicians that include Little Richard and Ben E. King. In 1995, Price received Rhythm and Blues Foundation Pioneer Award. In 1998, He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. 3 years later, he was placed in the National Black Sports and Entertainment Hall of Fame. Go ahead on, Price. In 2009, a year before, he was inducted into the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame. Price co-authored with William Dollar Bill Waller the book Lordy, Lordy, Miss Claudie. And then there's another one called The True Kings of the 50s. He was last honored in 2019 when he was inducted into the National Rhythm and Blues Hall of Fame. Lloyd Price died of complications from diabetes in New Rochelle, New York on May the 3rd, 2021. He was 88. And family, I just want to say this too. He also helped Don King set up the fight that Muhammad Ali and George Foreman had in Zaire. This man was doing some of everything. So I just pray with the wife and the five kids, you know, when he passed, I just pray everything was in order. Thank you so much, family.
Awesome. Hey, thank you, Sister Didi. I think you, was there something else you wanted to let us know about the phone?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Family, can we please make sure that our mics are muted because we could hear the sound. So please, everyone, mute your mic. And then if anyone has any questions or anything, you can please contact us at Sankofa Council, MKE@gmail.com. Any questions or comments, please contact us at Sankofa, MKE@gmail.com. Once again, I thank you, family, and I pray that you enjoy the program.
All right. Thank you. Queen Mother Shabaka, are you with us?
I am here, yes.
Good evening. You did such a wonderful job introducing Attorney Evans. I just figured you'd like to get us started today and introduce Attorney Evans.
Of course, I would love to introduce my favorite Attorney Evans.
they all say that.
Quit saying favorite. we're liking.
Okay, so Attorney Evans is a solo practitioner with a focus on small business development, employment law, municipal law, and construction contracts. His law practice includes a focus on probate law, mediation, alternative dispute resolution, and representing small and disadvantaged business entities. He has coordinated DBE participation. That DBE is?
Disadvantaged Business Enterprise.
Disadvantaged Business Enterprise. I have it somewhere. Yeah. Okay. And he serves as co-counsel in the sale of county grounds property to the UWM Foundation for Future Development. Attorney Evans has worked familiar with policies, procedures, processes, and delivery of services to his clients and the community. For his contribution to the community, he was recognized by the City of Milwaukee with the 2019 Frank P. Zettler Public Service Award. He is considered an articulate and outspoken community advocate involved in programs and causes that are geared towards empowerment and improvement in the Milwaukee community. And we definitely heard that in his commentary last week. And so people are really interested in the subject now. So on behalf of the elders of Sankofa Council, I want to welcome you, Attorney Evans, and thank you joining us again to talk about this complex matter that all of us have so many questions about, and I know they won't all be answered in one setting, but one of the things we want to talk about is how can we move forward to empower our people with this information that is so needed. So again, welcome, Attorney Evans. And I'm going to ask you to just take it away because you have some questions that people have asked and some information that people want. So,
all right. Thank you, Hotep. And thank you, Queen Mother. You are really trying hard to make yourself my favorite client with all of those adulations and comments. But that's just part of the history. And I'd like to thank the Black Reality Think Tank and the Sankofa Council for doing this podcast, because it is so critically important that the community in which we live and serve and have been a part of because of our culture and heritage receive the knowledge necessary to deal with a lot of issues that we're not focusing on, but we have the capability of grasping and making to our own benefit those things work for us. I must say before I get started that, man, I am so impressed with the libation. What a powerful statement, if you really listen to that, about who we are, where we are, and what we need to do, where we have been. I mean, it is so important. That could be the feature emanating from all we talk about today when it comes to inheriting and probating and preparing and those types of things. Just to parody that a little bit, he talked about we cooked the first meal. I was reading in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times the other day, there is a podcast that's going to be coming on called the High on the Hog. And it was a book written by Jessica Harris, who has traveled for the last 30, 35 years between Africa and the United States. In developing a thesis about how we as a people, African people, came to this country, and through our ability to understand food and to cook the food and prepare it, we have changed the culture of this country, which we don't get a lot of credit for. And I think it's a podcast worth checking out, High on the Hog. Remember, we used to eat High on the Hog until we were put in slaves, and then we were eating feet and tails and nails and entrails and everything else. But it wasn't all, and then we turned that into a delicacy in cuisine because, pardon?
I just said, no secret.
Yeah, because of our, but again, we, you know, to hear the libation and hear the information over again and this podcast, I mean, this the telecast that's coming up, I think it helps bring us all together with what we're talking about now. I know my wife and I travel to South Carolina every year. We have a timeshare on Hilton Head Island. Yeah. And we go to Savannah and we go to Charleston. And we go to Hilton Head, and we go to the African Village, and we travel throughout that area, which were where our ancestors first came upon the shores of this country. And it is unmistakable the influence that we as an African people had on this country and this culture that has been denied and we don't get the credit for. But when you go and you see it and you smell it and you taste it, and you ask those who have studied, like yourselves as scholars, then it is just undeniable who we are, what we are. And I think these kind of things help us develop the kind of attitudes we need to regain the type of power we need to understand wealth and take the wealth that we do have and turn it into something that that benefits us. And I know I received some questions, and thanks for the emails and questions that I received from you during the week based on the last podcast broadcast. And what I'm trying to do is provide some general information and not necessarily practice law, because when you start practicing, then I will give you instructions as to what you do and follow you and things like that. But to give general information, it provides you with a basis to get some understanding and make your own decisions. Because once I make you a decision for you, then I have a legal responsibility, because I'm licensed by the state of Wisconsin. I've recently taken on emeritus status, having practiced law for so long. They just leave me alone now. I don't have to take all these courses and the other things, because combined with experience and the amount of time and areas that I work in, they have a full understanding that if you don't have a grasp of what's going on by now, then you shouldn't be in the business. And part of my, as an African-American, again, is to look at things from an African-American perspective and how it affects me, how it affects my people, how it affects my country and everything else. Because when I look at wealth, and wealth is all the material that has money value, anything that has money value had some wealth, because remember cowrie shells, that was worth something. All of the other things, we used to barter and trade all the time, goods and services and so forth and so on. So we used to, money really, there was no money, we didn't have money, but we had each other, and we had things that we could do to provide sustenance to each other that helped us to grow and develop. And when we came to this country, we created, if you stop and think about it, and this is why American history is important, and this is why I'm having some problems with them jumping on the creator of the 1619 Project, because this is, again, another attempt to suppress our history and the impact that we have had. Because once you deny a person's existence, then they have no worth or no value. But if we look at it and break it down in history, we as Africans coming to this country, and I call us, we are Americans of African descent, because we were born in this country in Americas. But we are from Africa, not necessarily African Americans. We're Americans of African descent, because we have a new culture. We created a lot of things that are unique to this country. And they want to send us back to Africa with no connection to those things. And once we learn and understand our value, our worth, and our involvement in the development of this country, we, in my opinion, and I'm just giving my opinion now, we take on a different attitude about what is ours, what belongs to us, and everything else. Because we created, meaning our ancestors, are those Africans that were brought into Savannah and to Hilt Head and the Low Country, the Geechees and the Gullahs. We created America's, which is free labor, created America's wealth. And slavery denied us an opportunity to understand our value, because we were property ourselves. And we were treated in a way that we could not read. We were not allowed to get an education, to write, racism, law. I mean, all of those things that worked against us to not allow us. Systems were put in place, and after a period of time, Jim Crow raised his head, and this is what they're doing right now. You know, I don't know your political affiliation, but the Republicans are part of the old playbook in disenfranchising people of color in this country, especially Americans of African descent. And I think the Civil War has to be, all I can say about that is fix bayonets, because we're going to have to battle them for our rightful place in this society. Because they put systems, and I'm a systems person. I work on boards and committees, and I'd like to understand and deal with policy, because that's where you can march and demonstrate and do a lot of things. But if you're sitting at the table and can influence policy based on your point of view, you can have some debate and then call the question and get a vote and change things. And we need to learn how to understand and utilize the system, because if you don't know how to utilize the system will continue to utilize us. But we are property, and to a great degree, we are still property. I mean, you look at, when you talk about value, look how valuable we are to the criminal justice system. I mean, from the police, from the prisons, from, and again, I'm speaking from my involvement in law practice. I mean, so I see it, I mean, the social workers, probation officers, the criminalization. I mean, we can go on and on and on. I mean, but we are still property and don't understand the basis of who we are and what we should know with regards to, and what we should know, because knowledge is the key, and knowledge is to know. Because if you don't know, it's just like you asking me to go into court and you're innocent, and I got to tell the judge, well, Judge, I think, or maybe I believe, or I wish, or I guess, or I hope, or I desire. You don't want me to base my argument in defending you on those types of things. You want the proof, the evidence, the facts, and everything else to give yourself the best opportunity to prevail. One of the questions that was sent to me was, how do we go about getting a better understanding of probate and wealth and things like that. And I tell you, honestly, I wish I had an answer. We were fighting an uphill battle because our educational system is not geared towards us knowing and learning like we should, to be independent and understanding the value of what we are. We can talk diversity, we can talk affirmative action, we can talk, and I've sat on national panels dealing with those entities, trying to gain parity. I reviewed contracts for the participation of minorities on construction. There is an attempt to do this, but there's not an honest effort behind it. And in order to put an honest effort behind it, people really have to be in a position to accept our value and our worth. And when we talk about wealth, you know, our wealth is hidden in plain sight. I mean, we see it, but we don't understand it. We have things because this is another thing. With all due respect, and we need to have reparations, there is no doubt about that. Because this country was built off the free labor of our ancestors, and we are owed. But I think it would be doing us harm because we're not ready for reparations. We have no economic structure to appreciate the reparations, regardless of the form, whether it's free college for the next 15 generations, or, you know, a chicken in every pod, or 40 acres in a mule, or however they would do it. We don't have the structure set up, in my opinion, in practicing law, because, you know, I see people come into money, come into wealth, and before you know it, it's gone. Because the systems are set up to take your money. We're in an economic system, and the structures are economics. So it's difficult to talk about what we need to do because we haven't traditionally in our families talked about wealth and economics, because we've been too busy trying to survive. We've been too busy, I think, in the here and now, trying to fight these things that, like racism and disparity and discrimination, and this has distracted us from wanting to take time to invest in knowledge and invest in putting together entities that will help us to gain the wealth that we need to have the impact that we need to have. I know that Sister Dee Dee, and I really appreciate her her bringing forward people who have accomplished things in the African American community. And her music example is a classic example when we're talking about, and I'll get into some of the questions that have been sent, but just as a prelude to give some examples, the music industry, for example, you could take Aretha Franklin, James Brown, mm-hmm. Michael Jackson, Prince, mm-hmm. Lloyd Price, mm-hmm. between them, they have made hundreds of thousands of records.
Yes.
They have generated billions of dollars. And you know, I know Aretha and James Brown and Michael and Prince, people are fighting over their estate.
Yes.
The only people who are getting money out of the estate now are the attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so all of this money that we have accumulated and not set it up, we can make music, but and this is what I appreciate about some of the younger, although I'm not into the rap thing, I think the business, and that is just where we're at right now, and it has a place, and it's part of the evolution of our culture, but they are more astute now with regards to what wealth is and how to impact and how to put entities together in order to make them more wealth that they could pass on to their children. It's just mm-hmm. like the Aretha Franklin, she had two or three wills, and now her family is fighting over all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's I did an article back in the 90s called The Vulturization of Death. We mm-hmm. as a people, once we pass away and we have not prepared, then this allows anybody who is desperate, thinking they got something coming, to swoop in and fight over the carcass.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens to us. And we are slowly learning. This is why I'm really happy when people call and say, well, look, I want to put something together here because I think it's important in order to do that and to pass things on, because we have stuff. I mean, I tell people to do an inventory of what you have. You think you don't have anything, just do an inventory. An inventory is taking an account of what you have and what you don't have. And then you put a value on what you have. You may have, my dad had a lot of coins. I didn't know what they were worth or what their value was, but he accumulated these. He was proud of his coin collection over the years and things like that. When I appraised them, I was amazed at how much, you know, some of those coins were worth. If I hadn't known the value of those coins, then, you know, I would have just given them away or taken them somewhere and somebody would give me a couple bucks for them. But I was able to get them evaluated and get the appropriate money for them in order to provide a foundation so he could live his life, not necessarily have it inherited by his kids, because I wanted all those things that he worked hard for, like working 35 years second shift at Harness Fager and wow. never missing a day of work in his 35 years. I didn't find that out until I was fixing up his obituary and doing some research, which said to me, man, this is just so powerful. Those things we don't know until you pass away. So you can't take it with you. Again, is a novel approach that I use to trying to get people to understand, you know, hey, what do you have? What do you think you have? In the situations that you have but don't know to ask questions about. This is why it's important to, if you don't, have an attorney. If it's me or somebody else, having an attorney who can give you some sound legal advice. Because I can tell you the Wisconsin statute, 851, which is extensive, and you can go and read about it. but all of the case law and all of the process and procedures that go along with it would cause you some problems, and the difficulty in navigating the law is complex. So having someone who has knowledge and who has the expertise, I think it's worth the investment. A lot of people don't want to invest. They don't want to get the kind of counsel they need, and they wait till the last minute, and they get the kind of counsel they don't need, which is, well, it's too late, and there's nothing you could do. And these steps should have been taken. Sure.
First of all, I want to say thank you. This is Sister Dee Dee. And then I wanted to ask you, you know, when I was reading about Lloyd Price, now, would an attorney also, like, if you had been his attorney, would you also would have handled all his stuff that he had in Nigeria also? Or would he need a lawyer for that? You know, well, like, if people got business and homes and stuff out of the country.
That's an excellent question, and that's one of the questions that were sent to me. First of all, as an attorney, I'm licensed in the state of Wisconsin by the Wisconsin Bar. So, and each state has slightly different laws for a reason. That's why they're individual states, and the law is slightly different. But if the will was in Wisconsin and we opened it up in the Wisconsin probate court, which is governed by Wisconsin laws, then that allows me to hire counsel in Nigeria. If it's related to my client's assets, I would have to pay them, of course, but it allows me to, or the personal representative, but most of the time the personal representative for the legal hookups and dealing with lawyers and all of the paperwork that has to go through probate court, the attorneys put that together. But no, I would work with them to make a determination, because part of the inventory is to find out what you own, what belongs to you, and what is it worth. And then the person has authority on your behalf to either sell it or maintain it or whatever they decide to do with the counsel of myself as the attorney counseling them. I don't tell them what to do, but I let them know that these are the laws. These are the attorneys I talk with in Lagos. This is the law there, because I'm relying on those attorneys to provide me with the law there so that I can interpret the law here, which governs the will itself. So they're across jurisdictions, because people will call me. I've got a couple things going now where somebody was taking care of a brother in Michigan who passed away and had an ex-wife who wanted to come in and take the house and things like that. So, and she was the personal representative. So we had to retain counsel in Michigan to file the proper papers there, because we had authority to give that attorney the authority to prevent waste of the estate and to do an accounting and so forth and so on. So, yeah, to answer your questions, I would be the key person for the estate dealing with any other attorneys. And you can imagine somebody like Michael Jackson, how many attorneys he had, or James Brown, or, I mean, there are record deals, there are, and then not including, you know, when you have children that, you know, there are a couple of entertainment people had just a slew of children, and they all felt they had a reasonable opportunity to get something that belonged to them. And again, that's what inheritance is. You get something that is passed on from your parent or somebody who wants you to be provided for. So you got to determine who they are and what they are. I mean, so it gets complicated. Again, there's the technical, there's the complication, and then there are the simples. I mean, you do the will, power of attorney, power for health care, and you set up a simple will for people to provide them with the basic, it's just like a one-time insurance policy. I mean, we're all going to have diminishing health, and we're all going to get to the point where we cannot function like we want to or used to, and we're going to have somebody who we trust and that we give authority to act on our behalf, and you have to give that person authority while you're capable of giving them authority. If you have a stroke or something like that, and somebody calls and says, well, grandma had a stroke, and I need to get her bank account, it's too late because she cannot give you authority to do that. And you need the bank account to take care of her business and pay her bills and things like that. So it's important. And you can eventually do it, but the process you have to go through is so long and so arduous that if you had a will, it would be very simple. You just look at the will, see who the personal representative is. Are the signatures on the will authentic? Did the individual in their right mind sign this will, given this individual authority? And then that is what you, unless there's somebody who wants to refute it, then that's what you, how you move forward. Because if you don't, it's just like I was mentioning, I think last week. And again, you can chime in anytime you want if you have a question or anything like that. I'm just kind of going all over the place on some of this. But there was somebody called me from the funeral home saying Junior came from St. Louis. And Junior was a son that they heard the father had but didn't know. But he came from St. Louis and took Dad's brand new car. Hmm. Took the car, got the keys, and left. And I said, well, who's in charge? Is there a will or somebody have authority? And I said, no. And I said, well, there's not a lot you can do. But let me explain to you, Junior may have taken the car, but he can't get it registered. It doesn't belong to him. He can't get insurance. And the only thing he could do is leave it on the street somewhere where somebody get it, chop it up, and, you know, it's destroyed. But the thing is, the note on that car, which is $30,000, still exists. So the estate, even though the car is gone now, you can't trade it in or give it to, you know, even though it's gone, you still owe for that automobile. I mean, that debt didn't just cease. That's a debt that the estate owes. So they need to give the car back or have the... somebody assumed a note, or they have to pay for it. So here they are, nobody in charge, car is gone, it's going to be destroyed, and they still have a $30,000 deficit that they have to deal with. And this comes from not having the authority to call the police to send somebody to find Junior and get the car. I mean, and there are scenarios like that all the time. You know, every time the phone rings, I'm saying, well, what's up now? That's why I'm reluctant to give advice, because every situation is slightly different. And you have to look at the situation in its totality in order to give the appropriate remedy for getting things done as best as possible. Sometimes it's too late, and sometimes there are things you could do after the fact. So, if there are any questions, there were a couple of questions somebody asked about durable power of attorney for health care. Mm-hmm. If you were to become ill with COVID, who would you want to make health care related decisions for you? You would have to make those decisions. Who do you trust? Who do you want who will make a decision on your behalf when you're unable to do that? Because, again, I give the example of my dad. I had power of attorney and durable power of attorney for health care. When he went into the health care facility, when he had a turn and he was incapacitated, but he was still on life support and things like that, I had the responsibility, or the person who has the I forget offhand who they call it. But that individual has the authority to, again, communicate with the doctors, to recommend treatment, to recommend no treatment, to see files, and make life-ending decisions. You can't make them. So somebody that loves you or appreciate you, because some people will say, well, hey, just pull that tube right now and let's get this on with. I mean, but there are evaluations, or some people will say the on the other end, oh, no, we want to keep him, but no, nobody wants to be on tubes and hooked up for on it. But hospitals are bound to, by their oath, to keep you alive as long as they possibly can. So they can't make that decision. Question.
Attorney Evans, I was just going to hold off a second. We're going to do a sponsor announcement. We're coming up on our break at 7. But before we do that, I'm just going to do a sponsor announcement, EDOC Advice. It is a website created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. That gives the questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health and that makes sense to you. That's at www.edocadvice.com. And do you have a service you want others to know about? We're looking for sponsors. You've written a book we need to read. Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to Cash App, Money Sign, capital N, lowercase IRVANAINSTI, and PayPal Sankofa. So I thank you again for that. And, yeah, we have a handful of questions that we got from last week. And, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about, Attorney Evans, is that this was a week ago. Last week, Saturday, we had this discussion. And inside of the week, and I'm just going to use Wisconsin for an example, we've had well over 300 deaths. From last week to current, well over 300 deaths. And a lot of those were in, and I'm going to just use some from the COVID, and a higher percentage of the COVID from the Hispanic community than I think we're fourth. But so there's some things that we're learning and doing right in regards to those type of things. But again, death is something that's evident, that's something that's going to happen, and what are we doing to get ready? I like the discussions that we're having, and some people had called me stuff in and sent some emails, and we're going to, you know, answer those as much as we can when we get back. I know we might not get to everything, but that's what we're going to try and do.
Okay, yeah, I have a list of about 5 or 6 questions that someone sent me. And if there's folks on the line, or if you have any questions about anything that you would like to know in particular, you can ask those questions, and I'll try my best to answer them for you.
Definitely.
So one of the questions will: who will pay your bills and make business decisions for you until you're able to do so? Again, like I had mentioned, there are 3 documents that you should have in transition planning or estate planning. Power of attorney for healthcare, that's the durable power of attorney for healthcare, and a will, because they all follow each other. The power of attorney allows somebody to assist you while you're capable of doing things yourself. You give this power to somebody to do your banking if you're not if you're in a wheelchair or can't get around or something like that, or to, if you have property, you give them the legal authority to go to court to evict people and to do all types of things. So you give them authority, and then the power of attorney for healthcare is when that person goes into the hospital or care facility where health is the main concern. And if there is a need to make healthcare decisions.
And if you can hold that thought, Attorney Evans.
Sure.
You can hold that thought, because we're going to get ready and go to break.
Okay.
And then we will open it up. Callers, you can call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Thank you. We'll be looking forward to getting some calls from you. Okay. be going to break. And
what you're calling African history and Negro history are the missing pages of world history. Then he said, son, go study the history of your masters. Go study the history of the people who enslaved you and find out why they found it a necessity to remove an entire people from the respectful commentary of the history of the world. Well, my earliest impressions of them was a people in power who intended to stay in power, and I began to wonder why they had so much and other people had so little, and why everybody I knew worked harder than they. Who made this arrangement? I studied European history and world history. Now, when I went back to Schomburg with some knowledge of background of European history, now he began to show me how to study African history. Arthur Schomburg taught me the interrelationship of African history to world history. Willison Huggins of the Old Harlem History Club taught me the political meaning of history. And from the lectures of William Leo Hansberry of Howard University, I learned the philosophical meaning of history. The most valuable lesson I would learn is that when you address a people by their right name, that name must relate to land, history, and culture. All people go back to the geography of their original origin and identify themselves, no matter where they live on the face of the earth. We have overused the word black, because black tells you how you look, but it don't tell you who you are. You can call an Italian white. That don't tell you anything about him. We are the only people who seem to have lost that all essential trait.
Time for an awakening media lineup. All about times or Eastern Standard. On Mondays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspective with host Brother Oshi. On Monday evening from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. On Monday evenings from 8 to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with hosts Dr. Mawaya Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone. On Monday evenings from 9 to 10 p.m., on the first and third Mondays of each month, Conversation Reparations. Conversation Reparations. On Tuesday evening, from 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. On Fridays, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. from 8 to 10 p.m. on Friday evenings. Time for an awakening with host Brother Elliot Booker and his co-host Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And at 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday evening, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with host Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. And on Sunday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and his co-host Brother Richard. These are our lineup times. We thank you for your patronage, and please, by all means, check us out. You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
We're back, family. We are back. Thank you. Okay, we had a few questions. We do have some callers on the line, but I'm going to introduce Queen Mother Dede Chewbacca. And Dede, did you want to make another announcement before we get going about the phone?
You were getting ready to take some phone calls. That's the reason why I didn't say anything. I didn't want to tell folks to mute their mics. And were you getting ready to take some phone calls?
Yeah, I'm going to take some phone calls, but it's, you know, just in case with interference in the background once they get going.
Okay. All right. Well, I will say, family, if you have any questions or comments, can you please hit us up at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. Any questions or comments? You can hit us up at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. Thank you, Brother Kwasi.
All right. Thank you. Queen Mother Chewbacca, hi. How you doing?
I'm here and enjoying every moment.
Okay. Yes. All right. I'm sure you have some questions before we hit the lines. I know you had a list that you wanted to share with Attorney Evans.
Attorney Evans has the list, but I have another question that came up while he was speaking. Attorney Evans, I just wanted to ask, when someone passes on, who's responsible for paying their debts?
They are responsible for paying their debts, their estate. That's why you do an inventory to determine what belongs to you and what the value is. And once you make those determinations, it's like bankruptcy. You give your assets and your liabilities and you line them up.
Okay.
And you make some determinations sometimes. For instance, credit card companies, had a gentleman pass away and he owed the credit card company about $10,000 or something like that. But being able to negotiate with them, they took $2,000. Because if, you know, I said, well, I might bankrupt the estate and you won't get anything. So $2,000 looked like a whole lot of money. So you're able to negotiate the debts. But in your will, it indicates that your legal debts, your debts of last illness, have to be paid out first before there's any division of the residue. Meaning that whatever is left over, then you pay it out. But your debts, your legal debts, your debts of last illness, the court requires you to proof that you have paid for the funeral and those types of things have to be a part of the estate packet.
Got it. Yeah, thank you. That's clear.
Yeah, and if there's a question, you know, again, some of the questions that you did send me, like who should be receiving the funds from an insurance policy. Insurance policies have designated beneficiaries, meaning that whoever is designated the beneficiary of that policy after you pass, it belongs to them. So you wouldn't put an insurance policy in the will. Because insurance policy has its own designated beneficiary. So the insurance policy is outside of the will.
Okay.
And again, it depends on the combination. I'm dealing with a will now where it's complicated, so I don't want to get into it. But the dad passed on something to the mother. She was the beneficiary. He passed away. And then she passed away. So his estate was part of her estate, and we had to determine who the heirs were. And, you know, so it gets a little complicated if those things don't get changed as situation changes. So so insurance policies take care of themselves. And who has been listed as your beneficiary, you will have immediate access to the funds in the account if you die. It depends on what kind of account you have. Some people have savings accounts. Some people have joint accounts. You know, people are paying bills for them. So it depends on what kind of account you have. And if a person, say, for instance, you have a son or a daughter who is on your account with you, that person has authority to take funds from that account to by law, expend them on your behalf. They can't go, and if they go into the account and spend it on at Potawatomi or on themselves, you know, that's illegal. So they have a legal fiduciary responsibility to spend those funds for your benefit. And you have to really be careful too, because on some accounts it has, say, Jim and Susan. That means that you need Jim's signature and Susan's signature in order to withdraw from the account. And on some accounts, it has Jim or Susan, meaning that Jim could take money out or Susan could take money out. So you have to be careful how you set up your accounts in that regards. But those accounts, you know, if a person passes away, it becomes a part of their estate as well. It says, if you're named in a will you get items later after it's gone through probate? Well, it all depends. I know I'm, you know, getting older just like everybody else, and I have wills and those types of things in my wife. And we've accumulated some things over the years, art. You know, I've had several jewelers who couldn't pay a legal fee, so, you know, let's barter. So I have some unique jewelry pieces, and what I'm doing now is designating those to my children. I'm saying, hey, this belongs to you. I'm gonna use it until I ain't here. I'm borrowing it now, but I'm designating this to you. If those art pieces you want, I'll designate them to you. So you can start divesting yourself of these things right now by betrothing them to individuals. if you care to do that. Some people with they have homes, and what they try to do is quit claim their house. Say your house is worth $100,000, and you get ready to go into a nursing facility, and you may quit claim your home to keep it out of probate and everything else to someone else. But what happens in that instance, you are no longer the owner, and that person owns, if the house is worth $100,000, you have given them $100,000. And what if you need later on some money to, say you want to buy yourself a Cadillac or something, all of a sudden you want to spend some money or go to the Bahamas or go to Africa or whatever, you don't have that at your disposal because you have given that asset over to somebody else who owns it now. Plus, if you're receiving other types of assistance, say MagicCare or Medicaid, things like that, they will look at that transfer maybe as a fraudulent transfer to prevent that piece of property from being an asset of the estate. And they would call that a fraudulent conveyance because you're conveying it to keep it from being used to pay off debts that belong to you. So, I mean, you know, it depends on how you do it. Now, if you do it 2 or 3 years and a person is living there and they're paying taxes, then that shows intent that you intended to transfer your property. But again, you may get to a point after you transfer your property that you need that money to do something else. And then you're not going to tell the owner of the property to go take out a loan on your property so you can help me now. So it's best to hold on to that property until and probate it through the will, giving it to that person, you know, if you so desire. But I would hang on to my assets as long as possible because I may need them at some future time. You never can tell. If you're okay, question?
You know, I'm going to go to the call line. We have a few calls. Let me just see if you're there. 404-453. Caller, question or comment?
Yes, sir. How y'all doing, family? Y'all hear me?
Okay. Yes, you're coming through loud and clear, sir.
Anyway, it's a good show you got, man, but as far as see, you keep saying about slavery, right? But by my research, we all are slaves because if we got a certificate of birth and a Social Security card, we are still slaves, man.
No.
So, I mean, I checked, man, on your Social Security birth certificate. We are traded on the stock market, man. If you look up your last four digits of your Social Security card, and you go to Chase Bank and put that number on your birth certificate and look in your name, you will see that you've been traded on Wall Street, man, right now.
Okay, how does that relate, though, then? And I don't want to debate, you know, the nuances of whether we're still slaves or not because we are still in bondage for spiritually, mentally, physically, you know, but... and again, you can argue both sides. It depends on who comes to me first as to what position I take. So I don't want to argue against your position because you may have some valid points. But if you try to use that argument, say, in probate law or something else, or use that as a reason to influence, it's not going to work. If it doesn't fit within the statutes of the law that you are working under, then or there's not case law that supports your position, if that's the argument you use, then the validity, it may be right, it may be accurate, but the validity has no impact on what you're trying to achieve in probate.
Okay, man. I'm gonna change the subject. Hold on, I got one more coming, man. One more.
Okay, go
about
ahead, sir.
About this reparation thing. See, okay. I did some research on my family, and we was already over here, man. Like on my father's side, we Blackfoot Native Americans and on my mother's side, Seminoles. Okay, so we was already over here. So on this reparation thing, I think the number one thing we should be looking for reparations is no black people should be paying no taxes, man. Why should I pay the police to kill me, man? Okay, that's property taxes and regular taxes, income taxes, man. I can't see us feeding the beast, man, to kill us, man. Okay, I can't see us paying the police to kill us, man. We can't even drive our car or walk down the street without getting assaulted by the damn police, man.
Okay, well, I don't want to go too far off the subject, but our taxes pay for more than the police. And if you don't pay your taxes, again, there are laws that say if you owe taxes, you have to pay them. A lot of people don't pay taxes because they don't work. But they avail themselves of tax-funded services, which other taxpayers have to pay for. So I agree. We shouldn't have the, you know, we should refund the police because they're not, well, I don't want to get into that argument. I understand where you're coming from.
We appreciate that question. I got one more statement.
I'm just like Reverend Jeremiah White, man. America, goddamn America, man. I'm sick of this damn country, man. And I can't see him keep paying these folks killers.
I would ask you, what is your alternative? Do you have a ticket to another country somewhere, or what are you gonna, you know? Because if you are in a position that you want to do something else, what are you gonna do? And if not, how do you take the situation that you're in and try to get some understanding as to how you can make it provide you with what you need? So if your alternative is not there, you know, I don't understand what the argument. My grandmother would always say, it ain't the two steps forward and one step back. It's the four steps sideways that keeps us off track. So we don't want to go four steps sideways. If I take one step back, I could jettison forward. But if we go sideways, then that would take us off track. So I don't want to get us too far off track. But I hear you.
I hear you, man.
Yeah.
I say we stay. I got my ancestors' blood on this soil, so we stay right here and fight toe to toe to tear down this damn Goliath system, man. That's what I say.
Right. We have to understand systems. I study systems. You know, I had an opportunity to go to Russia once. I was teaching a course over at UWM in American institutions, and this gentleman talked to me afterwards and asked me would I be willing to go to Russia, and I said no, I ain't willing to go to Russia. It's coal and everything else. But he convinced me, and I went over to Russia with 30 American students and 5 American professors to have a big long discussion, and I'm so happy I did. It was right after the coup, but it gave me some insight into Russia and Russians and what their systems are all about. That just broadened my thinking about all the propaganda that we receive from our own country as to what is and what is not. This is why getting those experiences yourself, being able to, like I said, there's nothing more powerful than walking the beaches of Hilton Head, knowing that your ancestors came upon the shores and were placed in bondage, and then to look over at an immaculate home that those ancestors built. The ironwork, the brickwork, and everything else. There's nothing like that. So getting those experiences are real important, even if it's in the cold Russia.
Awesome.
I appreciate it, man.
That was awesome. I appreciate that answer. We have another call.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. 718-676-718-676 caller, are you there? Are you just listening? Questions or comments? Okay, I don't think we have that caller with us anymore. So, sure, Attorney Evans, if you could continue, you talked about before the three things that people needed to have done. For, you know,
can't take it with you. You know, we're dealing with you know, with all these deaths with the COVID and just other scenarios, natural causes and incidents that take place.
Well, it should be natural to us after, but we haven't been provided the foundation, the cultural foundation, to really understand, appreciate, because they really had their knees on our necks when it comes to understanding and realizing who we are and what we are. And this is what the folks are in power now are attempting to do with the voting rights and so forth and so on. I don't want to get off into that, but it is a continuation and an offshoot of the situation that they have provided us. But and what I've found is everybody's not, it's just like the COVID, everybody's not going to get a shot for whatever reason.
Right.
And my thing is, I'm going to tell you my point of view, and I'm going to be an example, and that's all I'm going to be. I'm not going to get on you, but, you know, we can't be socializing and doing all these other kind of things, and I got some rules and regulations that I want to live by as well. So if that's going to cause conflict by you're not doing something that I think is important, then it's not going to work for us. So you should do some information and find out your comfort level. But it's just like anything else. Some people don't want to learn their wealth or their value. Some people don't care. Many people don't value themselves. It's like when I talk to young men and far too many young women now that really don't care about too much of anything. I mean, a life could be taken over the slightest little thing. The driving, and I know I'm across the street from them, and they roll up the blunts with the fentanyl in it, and then they take off like fools and putting everybody else in danger. So there is a sense of hopelessness out here also that envelops what we're trying to do moving forward. So the position I take a lot of times is, if you don't want to, you ain't got to, but leave me out of it. I'm looking for those, like when I go into the classroom, I tell students, look, I'm only here to teach those students who are interested in learning. If you don't want to learn, put your head on the desk, but don't interfere with that student who's trying to learn something and moves forward.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just it. Plain and simple, because too many times, and I've taught in over 70 different Milwaukee public schools over a two-year period, just doing some experimenting, and I've found, you know, a lot of general things, and I want to do some writing on it, but for the most part, our kids are not learning because of the chaos and the distraction that goes on. There's no focus, and if you can't focus, you can't do anything. So, you know, my philosophy is that, hey, if you're interested in learning, you know, we're supposed to, as educators, give everything we have and point you in directions that are going to make you, you know, achieve what your dream is. But if you've got people who are going to interfere, that's going to create some problems. So yeah, there are a lot of people who don't want to talk about death and dying. They don't want to, you know, so it's unfortunate, but don't have family members after you're gone now upset and crying and wanting to do things that they can't do. I mean, so I'm more interested in those who really want to protect themselves, who want to learn, who want to preserve those things. And again, live by the, you know, like the libation said, you know, all those things, we got our ancestors that we're passing stuff on to, but we have to understand and use the systems that are available to us. I don't treat people like, you know, my attorney associates. I treat them like attorneys because they should have superior knowledge than other folks. But I try to be an educator in my law practice and, you know, finding a level of understanding with people so that they can, you know, make decisions, you know, that are the right decisions for them. I don't make decisions for my clients. I will help you make a decision, but you have to live with the decision that you make. I will tell you whether it's right or wrong or helpful or harmful, but I won't tell you what you should do.
Excuse me, Attorney Evan.
Sure.
I have another question I wanted to ask you.
Sure, right ahead.
I experienced them years ago. I don't know if we talked, if you spoke on this one yet. For us parents that are listening of our grown children, my son got hurt some years ago. And they had, they had asked me, was I his power of health care or something like that? And I said, no, you know, I mean, and I work in a hospital. Well, I worked in a hospital back then. But, you know, I said no. And so they said, well, there are some decisions that need to be made, you know, on your son. You probably need to get an attorney or something. So there was this white family there also. And so the son or the daughter had pulled me aside because both their parents had got hurt. They were in the ICU also with my son. This guy had hit them on a motorcycle or something. But injured, and my son got assaulted over on the south side. Really terrible head injury. So that family told me, they said, here's our attorney. They said, you need to go and get a powerful health care attorney for your son. Otherwise, they can do what they want to do to him. And I'm like, what? And you're already distraught and just, you know, out of it and, like, just scared to death.
But see, that's the key thing. You know, have somebody that you can call up that you can know, you feel comfortable with and have confidence in before you get into a situation where everybody's running around crazy, the emotions are high, you don't know
but
what to do.
Most of us parents, you know, we kind of don't know that, or some of us, you know, you think, okay, well, because that's my child, oh, no, you know, you have say-so. But actually,
well,
you don't.
Well, yes, you do, but it all depends. Now, I had a mother call me a few months back about her baby had got arrested, was in jail, and she was all upset, had headaches, and couldn't go to work. And I said, well, okay, I'll call downtown and see what's going on and so forth and so on. So when I called her back and I'm saying, well, ma'am, I talked to folks I know downtown and they got eyewitnesses, they got DNA, they got film, they got everything, they got a confession. So, and on top of that, you know, your baby's 37 years old. He's really not a baby. So when a person is over 18, if they're under 18, then they are your child. You are responsible for them because they are not adults. If they're over 18, then they are responsible for themselves. And as an adult, they can give you or someone else authority to speak on their behalf. I mean, just because you are the mother and this maternal instinct, my baby, you don't have automatic power of attorney. And again,
well,
like
my
I said,
son was in a coma and he was like incapacitated or
yeah.
You know,
well it was too late then for him to give his full consent to you or anybody.
I got an attorney and the attorney took care of everything for me. So
yeah, there's a way to do that after the fact, but again, it's a lot more, and you can see that couple pull out their iPad or car right away and gave you the name of their white attorney that
they did.
I mean, so this is how it works. And again, I don't want to, I've practiced all over 40 some years and I lived in Milwaukee all of my life, you know, and I've lived in the black community.
See, I didn't know anything about that, you know.
But you're not by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're not by yourself. And it's just amazing the lack of knowledge that
we have.
Yeah. And it doesn't come to fruition until there's a problem and a question that has to get answered.
Right.
Yeah. Because I receive calls all the time about questions, you know, from people that they have, and I try to take a moment to figure out, give them some directions. A lot of times there's nothing I can do. But at least to give them some guidance as to where they can get some help. But again, we have to, it's just like anything else. If you've got a doctor, you should have an attorney, and you should have an accountant, and you should have the ancillary services that provide you with the framework for taking care of your business. I mean, but people say, hey, I don't want to hire no attorney. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, when you have to go to the hospital, you have to get a doctor.
That's right.
You don't want anybody cutting on you or telling you you have to take this medication. You want somebody that you know and you can trust. So it's the same way with attorneys. Well, make sure you pay them, because a lot of people want to say, you know, they're my attorney, and I'm saying, well, that lady ain't saved me nothing. So I'm not her attorney. So don't use me like.
You know how quick they can say, you know, call my attorney. And just like you said, you know, you need a doctor on hand or a family physician or something. So it's time that we start thinking too. You know, hell, we need an attorney.
Ma'am, I've been an African American of African descent attorney practicing in the city of Milwaukee for over 40 years. So I know how that works. So it's easy for me to say, well, you know, and I'll sit and I'll talk to people, but I'll say, well, now you got me practicing law, and now you're using up, and now you're putting a strain on my ability to compete. If I'm going to compete against somebody who's well-financed trying to take your house away, then I need to have, you know, don't give me a gun with no bullets.
Right.
Because once I pull the trigger, you know, it's over for me.
Right.
So, I mean, that is part of the concept of wealth and understanding of how we need to spend our money to protect ourselves. I mean, we don't do that because, again, we are, and I'm speaking in general because everybody's not.
Sure.
The reason we don't as a culture move forward is because there's such a drain and a drag on our abilities to do the things that we need to do that, you know, it's hard. It's hard out here for a black attorney, I'm going to tell you
that. Yeah. Well, Attorney Evans, I have another call.
Can I
have
ask a question?
Pardon?
Queen Mother, sure. Can I just take this caller? He's been on for a while.
Yeah.
So let me
okay.
get this caller. 414-758, 414-758. Caller, question or comments, or are you just listening? Caller, question or comments, or are you just listening?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Queen Mother.
So you mentioned about a person being able to do a quit claim deed to whoever they wanted to have their property. Would that be, there was a question on there about transfer on death instruments. Would that be?
That's your will. There are all kind of documents you can put together. It all depends on the circumstance and what your intentions are and what you want to accomplish as to how you would structure a will. And again, your will is a continuation of what you want after you are not here in a written form, giving somebody authority to carry that out. And when you go through probate, the probate court have policies and procedures that make sure those things get done. Sometimes you don't need a probate court. For instance, I had a man pass away. I did his will and he didn't sign it, and he passed away. So the will was no good because he hadn't signed it, got it witnessed, and he had joint ownership of the property with his wife. I was able, even though he didn't have a will, to get the property, which half was his and half was hers, all the property put into her name alone after I proved that they were married, and I had to send a death certificate and all those other kind of things. I was able to utilize the law to get the transfer so that she owns all of the property now without having to go through probate court. And he also had a debt for credit card that we were able to negotiate. So there are some things that you can do. And he has some cars that we were able to deal with the motor vehicle department to get the registration changed into his wife's name. I mean, so there are some things that you can skirt around the probate process and get done. But again, for a person's protection, you know, having a will provides no questions asked. Document as to what you, because you're not here.
And, no, Attorney Evans. I have a question. Now, you said he didn't sign it. Did he pass away before then, or did he give a reason why he didn't sign it?
When I prepare your will and I sit down and I go through every line of that will with you, person to person, I want to make sure that you understand what it's saying, what you're doing. I can explain like I'm explaining things now, answer any questions. And then that will belongs to you. My last instruction is to sign this in front of two independent people who are not in the will. I mean, it could be anybody. All they're doing is signing that you are the person that signed the will. And then that belongs to you. I mean, I can tell you, I had a couple that I did a will for. And the guy came by, he paid me, and I went on vacation. He wanted to get me before I went on vacation. I went on vacation, and he said, well, my son's coming in from Texas, and I want him to take a look at this before. Both he and his wife passed away on the same day.
Mm.
You know, they thought it was a murder-suicide, but she had cancer, and I guess the pressure of him, they didn't sign the will. Waiting on their son to come in so that they can. So that created a whole host of problems.
Wow.
Because my instruction was them to, this is yours now. You can sign it or not sign it, but it belongs to you. And the best thing for you to do is to sign it if you want what you what we have put in the will to be what happens. You know, so what you want to go to a certain person, because anybody can come in and contest the will. Right. I want this, you know, grandpa promised me that, you know, and I'm his favorite son and he don't like you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's all kind of crazy stuff. But if you have it in writing, signed, witnessed, dated, then that becomes the document that you can either through probate court or sometimes around the edges show that that person has authority, who is the personal representative, and this is in fact what the person wanted. But if you don't sign it, it's no good. And I don't keep copies of wills because copies are no good. The original is what you need to have. And if a person wants for instance, like I mentioned, there was somebody in the will they wanted to take out of the will. We don't have to do the will over again. What we do is do a codicil. It's like an amendment. We can just amend the will with a codicil. And it just says that the will that was dated May 21st, 2021 is being modified to remove this person from the will, no questions asked. And then it has to be, again, signed and witnessed and dated. And that becomes the legal part of the will as well.
Right.
I mean, so there's ways to change it if you wish.
Okay, we got Dr. James. She's got a question.
Okay.
Dr. James?
Yeah, I'd like to know about a trust and what would be the reason for or what's the purpose for a living trust?
Okay, if you have minor children and you pass away, you want that trust to be in existence in case something happens. You may it may be a minor child or a grandchild you want to put some money in trust for. Until they reach adulthood. So that money, you have an account somewhere, is designated for that individual. They may be a baby. and you want, it's a college fund, it's a college trust. Like I had mentioned last week, I had some classmates whose grandfather left them $500,000 in trust, and they were living and going to school off the dividends of the trust all 3 years. They never went to class, but they were able to finagle their way through law school, and when they graduated, that trust became theirs. It was no longer in trust. Or if you have an adult child who is an invalid, or you have someone who is a spendthrift, somebody who has been on drugs and you don't really feel comfortable in leaving money to, you can put it in trust. You can have somebody oversee the disbursement. You can have a trustee. You designate them to oversee whatever that person gets to make sure that they, you know, they don't get the lump sum and go and just, you know. So a trust is when you have something and you put it in trust until a certain thing happens, and then that trust is utilized for the benefit of that individual.
Okay.
I mean, and there are different ways. Like I said, I have some quilts that I'm going to be put in trust in the name of my parents, so Will and Sadie Evans, and then I'm going to entrust that trust to a museum somewhere, and that they cannot sell those quilts, and it will remain in the trust name of my parents in Fitnitum. And again, you know, they would be the owners of the trust, but they have a responsibility to maintain that. And if the museum went bankrupt or something, it becomes an asset, and they may have to be forced to sell that. But you want to keep items together versus you know, individually selling them or giving them to people who don't appreciate them. And you want to keep them together in trust so that, you know, other people can benefit and enjoy them.
Okay.
I mean, so trusts have different, you know, they have different meanings, and it all depends on the circumstance.
Sure. Okay, I'm going to do another sponsor announcement.
Go right ahead.
Okay. EDOC Advice, we provide a specific medical answer to those seeking a better understanding about medical conditions and health. We offer our faculty of EDOC, who are licensed physicians and health professionals, who make themselves available to those globally seeking a better understanding of health issues and medical practice. And do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to Cash App, Money Sign, Capital N, lowercase IR, VANAINSTI, and PayPal Sankofa. All right, thank you. I tell you, this continuation of last week and the information you provided today is some good information, and it's just still troubling, like you said, with the things that's going on, and so many people just not being prepared, and you know, and the finalization, when it's final, it's final. What can be done? You know, like you
well,
said,
you can't take it with you.
Exactly.
Yeah, you really.
Some of us don't.
try it. King Tut tried it.
Yeah.
And now all this stuff is in the museum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can't defy the odds, and it really bothers me again as a African American or American of African descent attorney, you know, watching. And knowing a little bit about history, I'm not a scholar as some of the people participating in this Sankofa Council, but you know, I do have some knowledge of history, and it is in combining that with my law practice, it is so disheartening and so troubling to watch the slave master's children, grandchildren, great grandchildren, who have inherited the future of our children and grandchildren and children, by using the unpaid for labor of our forefathers, you know, who labored free to provide them with what they have. Because, you know, I tell my wife all the time, you think all these billionaires are smart? No. You think they are knowledgeable? You think they could build a pyramid, or they could screw a light bulb in? Or no, they inherited the money that they have, and their parents inherited because they set it up, you know, through the wealth that we free labor. You know, if I had 100 slaves working for me, man, I'd be rolling in heaven.
I'm just wondering when you talk about, you know, us not having this preparation and this mindset, I mean, do you find that to be a combination of things? One, okay, we don't know, we don't understand. And two, we don't trust going to these people, these attorneys, these doctors, and other people outside of our immediate family to do certain things because we have a history of them not being truthful with us. And so do you find that also to be part of the problem where people are just, who can I really trust to do this work for me?
Well, trust is the most important part, but how do you get to that point where people, you know, and again, you know, we can go back to the, I can remember, you know, before the freeway, we had the Boy Scouts, we had the church, we had the this group, we had the that group, and we got to know each other, and we got to trust each other. We got to do little things that showed that we were capable, you know, and everybody made the adjustments as to, oh, you're good in math, and you're the one that handled the book.
Right.
And then but we don't have those fabrics that much anymore. There are some vestiges of them. But we're not teaching them as a habit. I mean, we have gotten out of the habit of making sure that our children are financially appreciative of and understand the value of what they have. Because for the most part, you know, they haven't had to really do without that much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because we have wanted them to not deal with the pain of what we've had to deal with. So we've given them a little bit too much without applying the values of hard work and how you get it and those types of things. So the fabric of our culture has been frayed. It's still there, and we need to somehow capture the fabric and weave what we can do and what we do understand back into it so that we can capture more of the trust of people to get done. I mean, we all suffer that. I mean, we're not that far out of slavery and mistrust and distrust. And there is a reason the system is set up for us to distrust.
Exactly.
I mean, and look at all of the folks have gone to prison innocent and get beat up and killed and things like that. So the pressure is still on us. And then, you know, we have turned inward, and we do suffer from PTSD in our – I mean, so there are a lot of things that we are up against, but it takes people who are bold and strong, and the only thing you can really be is an example. Do you have a will?
Right.
Do you have a power of attorney? Do you have a power of attorney for health care? Because you understand its value, and you took the risk to find someone or ask someone, because I get it all the time, you know. Sure. You know, somebody told me to call you because you did this for them, and they feel comfortable with you, so I feel comfortable in calling you. I mean, and that's how we are. That's how we are. And that's how
we're
gonna be.
Sure. And I get that, and you know, these are things that we don't want to think about, but we need to think about. And and there's a lack of trust for a number of different reasons. We get that, but at the same time, it's a reality that happens to somebody every day, every hour of the day.
Yes. Well, this is why I go to churches or do Clint Rose, and I'll do a seminar called You Can't Take It With You, because I want to combine my knowledge of history, my passion for who we are, knowing who we are, and building a better community. This is the only way I know to do. I mean, okay. I can't. I'm not coming over to cut your grass or shovel your snow or nothing, but I can help you, you know, get your business in order so that your transition is a lot less chaotic than I know it's going to be if you don't have.
Now, you said you've been to churches and places like that, and of course, usually when that kind of thing happens, people, they generally probably ask for you. They know that you're coming, and for a specific reason. Is that pretty well received for you in those situations?
Yeah, just like anything else, people who are interested will come. If I throw a party and only one person comes, we're going to have the best party we ever had.
Sure.
So I'm not worried about it. I've just put it out there, and I'm going to be available, and I'm going to give it all I got so that at the end of the day I can feel, you know, comfortable with myself. I could look in the mirror and say, hey, I did the best I could do. And my grandmother, who's been gone for a long, long time, I could honor her memory by doing the best I can do with what I got under the circumstances.
Okay. Well, I tell you, that almost sounds like a closing thought. But is there anything else you would like to add for our listeners to understand about what they need to do as far as not taking it with them and, you know, their estate? I mean, a lot of people think that when you say estate, they're thinking, well, I don't have an estate, because they don't understand. That's just where you live, what you got and so forth, what you accumulated. But they're thinking that's something for a rich person, and they're not thinking that they're rich. So that kind of throws some people. I'm just saying that's how a lot of us think.
But this is why the power of words. I majored in English. And words are powerful. And I'm a contract attorney, and how you put them together, so I can look at contracts. And you know, people don't understand. And I always tell a person, don't say a word you don't understand what it means,
right?
Because you can create all kinds of problems. And I've taken liberty, and this is through having read Malcolm X when I was a freshman. I've read the dictionary a couple times.
Sure.
You know, just as a challenge. And so when you read words and understand them and can combine them, you can communicate differently with folks. And if you know how to articulate them in a way to get them to understand how you feel, you know, because a lot of people don't. I mean, people don't understand. I mean, you know, people don't understand. That's why we have to have mechanisms like this. This is why I appreciate the Black Reality Think Tank and Sankofa Council, and I really appreciate you guys for doing what you do. It is provided.
Well, we thank you for being here. We thank our listening audience, and of course, we thank the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee for its support of this program and for sharing this vision for the unity following Afrocentric principles, and helping us learn as these principles over our lives. We look forward to bringing more principles to you, programs to you, for you to enjoy. So we really thank you. We thank Queen Mother Shabaka for, you know, setting this situation up. And Sister Dee Dee, as always, with her questions and ancestral profile. Doc Rogers, Dr. James, Brother Cujo, just so many people that are very consistent with the calls. Again, we thank you again, Attorney Evans.
Thank you.
It was just awesome with the information. And again, people can email us, you know, SankofaCouncilMilwaukee@gmail.com for if you have any other questions or concerns about this program. And
They can contact you, and you can forward me their emails, or you can give them my email number, and I'll respond to them as best I can.
I appreciate it. All right. Thanks again, and we look forward to going to the attorney again. All right.
Thank you so much, Attorney Evans.
All right. Hotep, and thank you, favorite client.
All right. Hotep. Peace and blessings.
Hotep.
All right. Well, good night, everyone. Peace and blessings.
Good night, family.
But he winds up